Christopher Calandra, Certified Financial Planner, is an innovative, comprehensive, informative, and cutting-edge podcast that discusses financial topics ranging from personal finance, economics, politics, and personal growth. Simply Financial will cover intriguing and thought-provoking questions so that the listener can simply increase their financial IQ.
Welcome to the Simply Financial Podcast. This is your host, Christopher Calandra. This is episode number 6 of season 2. I have a very special guest today, Lauren Forgione. She is the treasurer of F&F Concrete. I am so excited to have her join me. I've known her for, I guess, going on 10 years now, and I'm looking forward to asking her a whole bunch of questions. I think you'll find it to be fascinating discussion. So to start with, Lauren, thanks so much for taking time out of your very busy day to join me.
Thank you for having me.
So if we could jump right in, you are the treasurer of F&F Concrete, located in Plantsville, Connecticut, right?
Correct.
And it's a third-generation family business?
Yes.
And your title, treasurer, doesn't really do it justice, I think, because essentially you run the operation day-to-day. Is that a fair statement?
Yes,
it is. Your brothers who work with you, they would agree with that?
I believe so. I should bring them in to ask them.
Yeah, we may have to verify that. And we were just talking before we started recording that your family, including your, I guess, immediate family and your extended family, have been in Southington forever. Is that probably an overstatement, but close, right?
Pretty much, since my grandparents' parents came over from Italy.
Okay.
Both sets.
So you have tremendous ties to the greater Southington area. And so you grew up with lots of family around Southington, right? And what did you learn about money growing up? And who were some of the people that influenced you the most when you think back to growing up here?
Well, I'd have to say both of my grandfathers. I grew up with 15 cousins. We all grew up on the same street. And, you know, that's all my aunts and uncles. There's 10 total between my parents. And my grandfather on my mother's side he would work all day at a nursery and pave driveways at night and worked about 20 hours a day until he started the AquaTurf. And my other grandfather started after World War II, the concrete company, in 1953. So I'd say those two stick out to me the most in terms of being small business owners and learning about money at an early age and kind of learning the importance of that and hard work.
So growing up with this extended family and all those cousins on the street and two businesses that became, I don't know, what would you say? Like, very well known, right? I mean, the AquaTurf, for those who are not in the Connecticut area, is a very, very well-respected, popular, successful reception hall for weddings. Actually, that's where my wedding reception was.
Me too.
And, and so would you say you grew up in, was it wealthy growing up? Was it a poor household, middle class, affluent? How would you describe the upbringing in terms of, you know, I guess the class status?
It's very interesting. I never looked at my upbringing as wealthy. I would say it was middle class. I mean, I remember growing up, the company, you know, my father who currently owns F&F Concrete, you know, there was good and bad times, but it wasn't until the late 1990s, early 2000s, where the company started to become profitable. I would recall my childhood as middle class. We never wanted for anything, and money at the end of the day wasn't the most important thing. You know, my grandfather said his greatest accomplishment in life was getting his entire family to stay in Southington, not only stay in Southington, but build homes on the same street that he lived his entire life and where he created his business, and have 15 grandchildren that all lived on the same street. That was his biggest accomplishment.
That is quite the accomplishment, especially today's day and age. It's increasingly unusual.
Yes.
But is it possible, not to poke too much into the inner workings of your family, because my impression, knowing your family, is that you were probably affluent, maybe even rich, but you didn't live that lifestyle, and you lived middle-class values, and was not, like, flashy kind of thing. Is that possible?
Looking back, in retrospect, I would agree with you. Yes, I had a very normal upbringing, mm-hmm. in my opinion, was middle class, but right. to others.
But you weren't flying off to Paris or, on the family yacht or anything like that.
Yes, nothing like that.
Okay. So you mentioned your grandfather's, and it sounds one of the things that you appreciate, and I only met your grandfather, the one who founded FNF, a couple of times, but he was a workhorse, right? I mean, he was working until the very latter stages of his life. He passed away, maybe 2 years ago?
He passed away about 5 years ago, and he worked up until 3 months before he died. He was 89.
Yeah.
So every single day. Workhorse.
Tough.
Yes.
Hardworking.
Didn't take vacations, never retired. Still, wrote all the financials out and production reports with paper and pencil when, you can just go in the computer and pull up a report and print it out. But that's what kept him, It was his life.
So what kind of legacy does that leave in terms of you're running a business, it's a competitive business, it's also a male-dominated business, which I wanna ask you about. But what's it like running a third-generation business, a business that was founded on such a influential, powerful, hardworking family man? And now it's the third generation. I know your father is still in the picture, but you run things day to day and have for, several years, almost as long as I've known you. So what's it like running a third generation business?
Well, I consider myself grateful and lucky to ever have the opportunity. Most people my age haven't been able to have an opportunity like that to take over a business that's, been in business since 1953 and already has, equity and property and things. I mean, at this day and age in 2018, it would be almost impossible to start that same business now. So I'm lucky in that regard. But then there's also a lot of pressure. Everyone says third generation businesses, the third generation always fails. And they don't understand what the first generation or the second generation went through to get to that place. They don't understand the hard work involved and the perseverance. And so there's a lot of pressures in that regard, but I look at it as an opportunity that most people never get in their lifetime.
And hopefully, we won't say anything to annoy your brothers or family, but your mom's involved in the business a little bit. Your dad's involved in the business. Your two brothers are involved in the business.
Correct.
Up until his passing, your grandfather was involved in the business. Mm-hmm. I have a family. We all have families, and not everybody necessarily wants to work with their family so closely. So that must have tremendous rewards, but also a lot of challenges, no?
A lot of challenges, a lot of rewards. I mean, I have amazing memories working with my family, and it brings us all very close together. We see each other every single day. I see my mother every day. I see my brothers every day. My nephew comes into the office and I get to hang out with him for a few minutes and he'll hop on my computer. And we're very family oriented, but it also comes with its trials. It's very difficult to work with family. Mm-hmm. Not everybody is always on the same page in terms of decision making, and it can make things more complicated once people start getting married and having children. And, it can get more difficult as time goes on and we're trying to grow the business, trying to have steady yet healthy growth.
Sure, you're juggling all the priorities, family members might have been single and might have been willing to work 60 hours, and then they get married and have children, and then their priorities change, their desire for what they do and the money and the time might all change, and you gotta adjust all those shifting priorities so everybody stays happy and content, because I imagine things could go wrong and there's lots of examples where it could tear families apart.
Yes.
But you guys have negotiated through it pretty well. And I know, which wasn't in my outline for the show, I know you mentioned that the family aspect of the business. So it's concrete, and you may not even remember this, Lauren, but you were kind enough to let me bring Dominic, my son, to the plant. And he went out with your brother in the back in, you know, the loaders and the trucks and stuff like that. And my son, that's 10 years old, was completely mesmerized to be in a truck and to be moving dirt and this, that, the other thing. But what I remember about that is not only how excited Dominic was to be having that awesome experience. Thank you for that. But your brother was even happier than my son, just playing in the back with the trucks and moving dirt and just kind of goofing around. He was so kind to my son, but you could tell he had a genuine enjoyment. He was having fun. So that was a takeaway I had from bringing him over that day.
Well, and that, we're very lucky that we all love what we do. It sounds crazy to say, but I love concrete. Mm. My father loves concrete. Our whole family. I think it's the most amazing manufacturing process in the world. It's the one product in the world that starts in a liquid state and ends up in a natural environment in a hardened state. I mean, glass, it starts in a liquid state, but it ends in a hardened state in a controlled factory environment. So concrete and what you can do with it and strengths and, but I'm losing my train of thought because I could talk about concrete all day, but
right.
We find ourselves, that's all we talk about. And we've made a rule, if we go on a family weekend or we're out to dinner, we say, okay, no concrete talk.
Yeah, we don't say that in my family.
No.
So you mentioned about your love for the concrete. So maybe this is a delicate topic, but you're leading a prominent concrete company in an industry that's dominated, it's male-dominated. Most of your employees are male, especially like the drivers and the people in the plant itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think most of your customers, when you're dealing with people on job sites and when you're out and about with customers and potential customers, you're mostly dealing with men. So I know we live in a modern age, but it's still an area where it's difficult for women in many ways. So can you share a little bit what it's like to be leading a company as a female in a male-dominated industry?
Sure. Well, initially when I first started after college in 2007, I was extremely intimidated. I, you know, didn't go to school for anything concrete. I minored in business, and I had to really immerse myself in the whole world.
What was your major?
My major was marketing and business.
Okay.
So I had to really immerse myself in this industry where I didn't really know much. And I started out by just educating myself. I took all the certifications I could take. I went and took all the national ReadyMix classes. And I went to job sites to just learn on the job. And started slowly introducing myself. Didn't want to just go on a job site and act like I knew what I was talking about or put up any type of front. It was a little bit more difficult 10 years ago. The climate's definitely changed on construction sites, but it still is a male-dominated industry. But now, after 10 years have gone by, I've had to prove myself.
Right.
And I believe I've done so.
But your solution at the beginning was first and foremost to really learn your craft and
yes.
get immersed in everything you needed to know to do your job so that you'd be well prepared when you were in different business situations. That's pretty good advice for young people that might be listening about know your craft, know your industry, work really hard, be prepared, because that's a good way to overcome obstacles. That makes sense. And so in operating the business, again, keeping in mind it's a third generation, are there any general rules that you operate the business under, like just guidelines, principles? I know here at Elliott Wealth Management, we have like 5 values that everybody has at their desk, and it's meant to be a guideline that if somebody's confronted with a decision, you know, that they could look to this as not the answer, but the path that they should work under. So do you have any rules that you could share about your philosophy of running a business?
What I always say, and I think it applies towards business or anything in life, and I take most of what I've learned and carried with me through playing soccer, but I have a little thing on my desk, and I always look at it, and I truly believe in it. It's do the right thing, even when nobody's watching you, and there's no shortcuts, and that's all it says. Mm-hmm. There's no shortcuts. Do the right thing, even when nobody's watching you, and I say that to everyone from our drivers to my family to every employee there that you may not be, somebody may not be watching what you're doing today, but if you come to work every day and do the right thing in all aspects, it will all fall into place.
It's a good rule to work under. Yeah. Do you remember where you got introduced? Like, who introduced you or how you got introduced to that quote? Do you remember?
I don't actually. I just have taken it in my own career. I was really thrown into this business, and I kind of had to navigate as I was going. And now I use all of these things to my advantage. At first, I had everything up against me. Being a woman in the construction industry, oh, you're the owner's daughter. You know, what do you know? You don't know what you're talking about. And after over 10 years, I've really proven myself by living by that principle and constantly learning and constantly involving myself and working really hard and putting a lot of hours in and, meeting people and developing relationships in this industry where people now trust me. They know I do the right thing, and people want to do business with companies like that.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. Even with today's technological advances, and you have all this automation and technology and all these tools available to help us both business-wise, socially, and the like, it still holds true that if you have personal relations and personal connections and you treat people well, that leads to good things way more often than not. And I think that's what you're speaking about. I think it's a great point. So you've been in the business for 10 years, right? So you must have learned a few things along the way as you've grown into the business world and had different experiences. As a small business owner, thinking about that entrepreneurial kind of spirit that has lived with your family and extended family a while, anything you could point to that you've learned over the 10 plus years?
There's so many things I could go on forever. I guess one aspect that really sticks with me is just how you run your business, whatever size it is, that trickles down to your employees, to everybody who even works in your office. Just treating my suppliers and people that we're purchasing from and maintaining those relationships and, not basing everything off of, you're going to have to cut your price and, just operating a business where you develop that loyalty and those relationships. And I really think that helps grow your own business when you have relationships with all of your suppliers and your customers and you have that trust.
Beautiful.
On both sides.
Great answer. So let's switch gears, because on a personal note, 2017, I think for you, we talked about it when we were together the other day, is 2017 was a big year of change for you. You got married. You bought a home. So I'm curious, with these big events between running the business, marriage, buying a home, how has your views on money and wealth kind of changed through this period of transition?
Yes, it was a crazy year.
Good crazy.
Good, very good crazy, but buying a house and getting married in the same year is never a good idea.
That's not what you would advise people?
No, don't do it. I guess my views haven't so much changed in terms of accumulating wealth, but, when I stopped to think right before I was about to get married, I said, now I have another person. It's not just me anymore. So thinking about that and trying to plan for the future, and I don't have children yet, but when I do, I mean, I started thinking about that and how I kind of have to tailor my, you know, money over the years.
Right.
It's not just myself
anymore.
More
purposeful.
Exactly.
Okay. So the advice is don't do those two things in the same year, and that now you have a little bit more purposefulness about like what you want to do in terms of how to position yourself. Would you describe yourself as more a saver or more a natural spender? How do you kind of view your spending / wealth accumulation habits?
I'm a complete saver.
Yeah.
I always have been. It's almost like a hobby, you know, to see how you can save your money and where you can, you know, diversify it. And I've always been a saver. I don't spend money on clothes. I don't spend money on unnecessary things. I would rather save it for a rainy day.
So it sounds like you probably have adopted the attitude your grandparents in all likelihood, like where you live beneath your means.
Yes.
Right? And you're very diligent about not getting ahead of yourself and accumulating debt and just spending money recklessly. You're pretty careful. Is there anything you could give us as an example of something you do splurge on, even though you're disciplined the majority of the time?
The only thing I really splurge on is travel.
It's a good thing to splurge on.
Yeah, and I know once I have children, I'm not going to be able to just get up and travel as often or go to these far exotic places. But the past 5 years, I've tried to make a rule, you know, and my grandparents never got to do this. And they just worked and didn't really take vacations. But once a year, the past 5 years, I've tried to go to a new place that I've wanted to go. I have a bucket list of experiences.
So what are some of the places you've been?
I've been to Thailand,
wow,
Peru, wow, Ireland, and I'm going to South Africa in 2 weeks for my honeymoon.
Very cool.
So I've done that, and, you know, when I have children, I'm not going to be flying 21 hours on a plane, but travel is something I always want to be able to experience, and, you know, 1 or 2 weeks a year taking off from work, it's not going to kill me, mm-hmm, and it actually would be, it's better for my mental health, it's better for the company. Everybody needs some time to reset and recharge. And
so again, this wasn't part of what I thought we would talk about, but just curious, so like when you go away, so you're going to go away in 2 weeks, and it's, mm-hmm, your honeymoon, so maybe it's not a great example, but how likely are you to plug into work in terms of checking emails, returning phone calls? Is the office going to be calling you? You are going to be. So you're not completely...
Oh, no, I won't completely. I set up my phone for an international plan, and I check my email.
Okay.
And it's just it's easier for me to enjoy my vacation if I wake up and have a cup of coffee and just respond to a few emails, mm-hmm, than waiting a week and coming back to all of that accumulated work.
Very good. And any notable money mistakes that you've made along the way? It seems like you've done so many good things, you know, a fabulous upbringing, very fortunate to be able to come into a family business and to be able to lead that business. I mean, it sounds like everything is wonderful. Any mistakes you could point to, either on the personal side of things or even the business side of things, that you could point to as a cautionary tale?
I think one of my mistakes is not investing enough money at a younger age and not investing more money, because I always err on that side of caution in terms of saving. And, you know, I wanted to have a little bit more built up in my savings account where, I mean, you're not making any money off of
it. So you're not talking about the mistake was not that you spent all the money spent more than you were earning.
No.
But more of it was allocated to just money in the bank as opposed to wealth building, investing, whether it's stock, bond, mutual funds, real estate, whatever, and you would have liked to have gotten more of that in place earlier?
Correct.
Okay.
Right. And I'm doing that now, but, you know, I'm 33 now. I wish I was doing more of it at a younger age, because it only accumulates, mm-hmm. and then you have more options.
So in thinking about that mistake, which actually in the whole scheme of things is a fairly slight mistake, what do you think, you know, thinking about like younger individuals that are getting out of college, say like my daughter is going to be going off to college. You've met Marissa a couple of times over the years. But, you know, what would you say, what advice would you give now that you are 33, running a business, married, 10 years of experience in a hard-nosed business? What would you say are some of the keys to success with money, in your opinion? And please understand, I'm not saying you've arrived and you've accomplished everything in the world, but just from your experience, which has been more successes than setbacks, what advice would you give to someone that was 10, 15 years younger than you?
Well, there's so many people you speak to or and you hear these news articles that a certain percentage of younger people don't even have a checking account or a savings account, and they just haven't been educated on money. And there are so many people that have.
Right.
But I would say, I mean, people go off to college and their parents didn't tell them, don't go and, you know, don't open a credit card. Read the fine print. But I remember my first day of college, there's booths set up with 100 different credit card companies. Open this card and transfer your balance for 0% interest. And then they don't read in the fine print that it's 27% interest after. Right.
But you do get like a frisbee or something.
Yeah, you get a free like squeeze ball. Things like that where people just really aren't educated. I still to this day, I have an American Express card that I pay monthly, and I will never, on the personal end in terms of debt, will never buy something that I can't pay off the next month. Okay. And that's why I have that credit card.
So you don't swear off debt completely, but you're very responsible and disciplined and thoughtful about using debt, right?
Correct.
Okay, beautiful. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. Time flew by. I was so excited to have you on and kind of pepper you with these questions. It was really wonderful. So I will be back with an episode of the Simply Financial Podcast next week. In the meantime, please share this episode and others with friends, family, and coworkers. That would mean a lot to me. Also, please subscribe to the podcast. You could go to the Elliott Wealth website. That's www.elliottwealth.com. Elliott has two L's and two T's. You could also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, other podcast platforms. That would be great if you could do that as well. Once again, I'll be back with you next week.
The views expressed are not necessarily the opinion of Sage Point Financial Incorporated and should not be construed directly or indirectly as an offer to buy or sell any securities mentioned herein. Investing is subject to risks, including loss of principal invested. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. No strategy can assure a profit nor protect against loss. Please note that individual situations can vary. Therefore, the information should be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Please note, the information being provided is strictly as a courtesy. When you link to any of the websites provided here, you are leaving this website. We make no representation as to the completeness or accuracy of the information provided at these websites, nor is the company liable for any direct or indirect technical or system issues or any consequences arising out of your access to your use of third-party technologies, websites, information, and programs made available through this website. When you access one of these websites, you are leaving our website and assume total responsibility and risk for your use of the websites you are linking to. Securities and advisory services are offered through Sage Point Financial Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, insurance services offered through Elliott Wealth Management, LLC, not affiliated with Sage Point Financial.